Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
I normally record to the computer. I don't know why I click cloud then. Think it matters?
Should we just start it again?
Mm.
Just in case? Or
well,
do you ever go to the cloud?
I just worry that my computer will fill up mid-episode. Yeah. The cloud, I don't know what the cloud is, like which cloud it's referring to.
The cloud.
Do you know how much storage you have in your cloud?
No. This is a good start.
I was having the same combo with Steve.
What even is the cloud, guys? What's the cloud?
Yeah.
Well, are we episode something? I don't even know.
Episode something.
Yes. We're back.
We're back. We've been on a bit of a break, mid-year off season for coaches as well in some ways. I was over in Europe for 3 weeks. Took a full week off work over there, which was nice to disconnect. You realize when you're on a week off just how much as a coach you are always sort of plugged into your work a little bit. And my family, I was actually planning on working the whole time over there, and I got the hard word from the family, like, nah, just shut it down. But good to be back. Australian summer, far out. I got back here and was just like, man, we're very lucky in this country.
Well, you missed probably the worst part of it, Reed. There was some like 0 degree days and it was really cold even up your way. And then, yep, you're back and it's just about to start kicking off, including racing. What have we got? 6 weeks till Sunny Coast or around that, and similar to Townsville Worlds, Western Sydney, as you said, middle of off season for triathletes as well as coaches. And now it starts to ramp up. Only 14 short weeks until Hawaii too. Danny, what's happening in the world of Adelaide?
It's cold as fuck, which is great. Everyone's sick. Everyone's been sick since seriously like weeks before Cairns, and that was obviously over a month or so ago now. So Steve's been sick a fair bit as well. I think he's just come good now. But Reedy, as you know, the only way he's managed to fit in this training lately is he's just abandoned everyone and gone down to the Middleton house that mum and dad have and just hung out by himself for a week. And
a bit of hermit time is sometimes necessary to get back on track.
Yeah.
Everyone we coach from the southern states, man, I do not envy you guys through winter. I mean, I know it's not bad compared to the rest of the world, but when we're out there in 20 degrees in the middle of winter most days, it doesn't make sense to me why anyone lives down there. Speaking of Steve, we should just so we don't get rumors going on down the track, but Steve, it was actually about a month ago, I reckon, or even before that, Clint, I said, I think it's time for Steve to start looking for a new coach. Not because we just had a really long run together. And I remember when I was with Matt Dixon and I'd had great success with him, similar to, if I do say so, Steve and myself working together, it's been perpetual sort of improvement. But you start to, I think you can start to just lose a little bit of passion because you're so used to doing the same things and you need some different input to make it more exciting or even to just be a bit scared of skipping the sessions again. So I said to Clint, I think it's time, Steve. And Steve is always like, no, I'll never have another coach. And I was always like, this could be a big mistake. So Steve's going to start working with the South Australian Institute of Sport, Danny, which is an amazing opportunity. It's a multi-million dollar facility right next to him where he can just get all the testing that I could never convince him to go and do. I'll be still working very closely with him as an advisor because I think while there'll be some excellent sports scientists there, I think there's just a level of practical advice around races that sometimes I'll need to keep throwing into the mix and we'll see how he goes. But I think it's a really exciting step for Steve and I was pretty pumped about that because it is a real different approach, much more, for him, he needed he needs to see things, I think, in a lab setting and be like, okay, this is why I'm doing it. Whereas, which is often I'll try and get him to do that, but it's so hard when you got kids and work and everything else on to make the time and go and find a good testing facility. And so exciting times. Will be a bit of an adjustment phase for everyone, I think. But yeah, that's the...
When you first suggested it, Reedy, I was like watching two of your best friends break up. I'm like, no. And then I started thinking about it a lot and I'm like, well, who's going to be better for him? And I didn't think a specific coach, I didn't think there was anyone, like a single specific coach would be a better option, because they're dealing with Steve, who is all over the shop. He would be the first to admit he's like just an absolute circus sometimes. But when it was explained where he was going, it just made perfect sense. And because it's like they're around the corner, it's just going to be, it's not as if you're going to like delete his number. Yeah, it's going to be it'll be a good way to try and move forward and see how it goes.
Yeah, that's right. I think if he'd gone to another triathlon coach, I would have been pretty worried, because it would have been a lot more of the same in terms of the training, but without the compassion for Steve's personality and understanding how he rolls. And also there's another part of me that was like, get some stress off my shoulders. Like, I loved coaching Steve and he was not time consuming at all. In fact, it was very hard to get him to, you know, I had to chase him to talk to him a lot of the time. And that was half the reason I'd stress out, because I'd be like, I don't know what's going on. Talk to me. So I think, you know, obviously he's one of the most talented athletes going around. You know, he pulls off races sometimes with injury, sometimes with sickness, and sometimes the prep so far from even close to good, and he still manages to beat some of the best guys in the world. So it's all there for him. He's got that challenge, I think, a little bit like I did. He gets pulled in a lot of different directions. And but if he can go in one direction and just ignore everything and be a bit of a prick to everyone for a couple of years and say no, then the sky is the limit.
For sure.
So, yeah, he's, as you said, he's going quite specific now with, like, why he's going to this new person. We can let him talk about who that is and whatever on his own socials. But what's your experience? Did you ever have a coach like that, Reedy? Was it always a triathlon coach, or did you ever go down that path as well?
Yeah, I guess the most close I had to that was I moved to Alan Cousins, who's very much a physiologist and, you know, very much numbers-based, lovely guy. But I think for me, as a really anxious racer, Matt Dixon was a real, I just think different coaches bring different strengths to the table. And Matt was very much working with my personality as well, and keeping and also just different stages of the career. Like, I think I would have been much harder to coach the second half of my pro career compared to the first half, because the first half I was like, I'm a blank slate. I'm just going to leave it to you and slowly give some opinions, but not think that I, you know, not have in my head what's worked before and all these sort of things. Whereas when you go to the coaches in the later stages, like, it's very hard to let go of everything you've known has worked before, and you end up being, I think, a lot harder to coach. Like, I know Alan Cousins, for example, would have loved me to, and I probably could have worked fantastic too if I just let go of racing so often, because I felt a lot of pressure to keep getting perpetual results for sponsors and, you know, play a longer term game and all these sort of things, which I was never very good at. So, but the sports science, I learned so much from Alan just in the short time I was coached by him, because it was such a different approach, so much more around the numbers and the patterns and the what to, you know, what his parameters were on certain things. So I think, yeah, I think it'll be hard for Steve not having someone understand the stress of everything else he's going through, or realizing that life can get pretty crazy. But I do think with what he's learned so far, he'll be able to use with common sense, you know, what needs changing from what he gets, and use the data he gets from the testing to go, okay, this is what I have to work on. Let's work on expanding this part of my physiology, or, oh crap, my, you know, my heat tolerance sucks. Let's just work on that for 3 weeks or whatever it is, you know. So having that, those, that sort of facility is going to be incredibly useful for him.
And then having you to bounce ideas off still will be invaluable. Like he can voice his thoughts to you and you can go yes or no or whatever it is and help him to get where he needs to be.
Yeah, I think it'll more be life counseling on the side. Yeah. But it's just so funny because my life's always in disarray as well.
It's been a while since we've actually chatted. So there's been a fair few races, more so in Europe than over here. But I guess we go back to Roth a couple of weeks ago now. But wow, what a race. Magnus just dominated everyone. And same with Anne on the women's side. Every year that race comes on and you watch the prep, like the lead into it, and then the actual day, it's just like, we really need to get a group together and take them over for that race.
Yeah, I did actually reach out to someone from Challenge to see if we could buy in advance 10 entries. No reply.
We just need to leverage as many of the pros that we have as possible ready and say, hey, we're going to bring X amount over, but we also need to bring this many age group people over as part of the thing, and maybe they'll help us out. But did you guys watch the race and any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was watching it live in Germany. And yeah, I mean, just super impressive from the race winners. And I think there was no huge surprises in that race. I think it's just when you see the groups on the bike and the amount of motorbikes and all this, you can tell why it's so, so fast. But yeah, I think given we don't dive into races too much anymore, I think just, I don't know if there's anything real standout outside of the winning performances you wanted to.
I think the one thing that I did find very impressive was I watched Daniel Backengard's video. He actually hit one of the age groupers on the second lap of the race. And you'd expect him to come on and do a video and like basically annoyed and shitty about the situation. And he was very understanding. He's like, the age groupers are the reason that we get to do the races. They need to be on course. It's hard for the, like, he was very understanding of the whole situation. And he's just like, it's racing and I move on to the next one. So I thought that was pretty professional and impressive on his behalf.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Daniel. I think every time, you know, I think sometimes he says the right things to sort of create some entertainment on some of his videos, but whenever it really comes to the crunch, he's super professional and humble. And I'm going to go and find out what my dog's barking at.
Danny Lake Placid on the weekend, one of the Pro Series races. Any standouts that you saw there?
I mean, there's the obvious standouts from the winners. Daniela Lewis, 15 minutes out, you know, behind the front pack, swim pack, and crashed on the bike and still won, which is crazy. And then obviously Trevor Foley's run was just out of this world, destroyed the
what
next
was he,
person by 10 minutes or something on the run.
236-ish, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And Matt Hansen, for context, ran 241. So yeah. And everyone knows his running pedigree.
Yeah. So, I mean, these run times are just getting ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
I went to a presentation with Olaf, the mad scientist, 2 years ago in Hawaii, and someone asked him the question of where do you think the times will come down? He said the swim will come down a little bit. Yes, there's improvement on the bike, but he thinks that the runs can get down in the 220s. And everyone was like, oh my God, not a hope. And they're like, people are starting to get pretty close. So yeah.
Well, the other thing too, Clint, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing too is initially with the advent of the super shoe, it was very much suited a certain run style. And now we're seeing there's that range of super shoe, plus you're getting fully customized to suit the athlete's biomechanics. You know, even this morning I tested 3 different super shoes on my run and I could just tell one was standout, suited my run style. So I think that's going to make a big difference too, is people will find that, okay, you know, for my strike rate, for my stride length, for, you know, the way I pronate, whatever it is, that there will be a super shoe for them. That, because even between super shoes, you can see 7 or 8 seconds per K often between super shoes for different styles of runners. And it's like aero helmets, you know, there's no set rule. Sometimes it's more to, it's very much to do with the individual. So yeah, I think that, and also the big thing is every time we make big advances in the bike, the run often gets better because people can get through the bike ride with far less effort if they wanted to run really well. So, yeah.
Speaking of, you go, Danny.
Just a quick one, Reedy, on that. Just the first thing I thought when you said the other day I did some testing. What kind of run session did you do? Like, you just ran 2K in each shoe? Like, what kind of?
Yeah, so typically I never try and judge a shoe too badly from one run. So often I'll take blood lactate. I'll do 2 or 3K reps, depending on what the session is. Normally try and cycle through two pairs of shoes, and it might be 10 times 2K, or for a marathon session, I might do 10 times 3K and cycle through back and forth, because obviously you're going to get some heart rate creep throughout the session. Check lactate too at the end of each interval. Often you don't even need to do lactates. You just can see a really consistent pattern, especially if you do it over a few runs. And it's not unusual for me to see a 6 to 7 beat heart rate difference. And what's really interesting is people love to test, you know, do a 5K test on a treadmill, which is great, but you really need to test under fatigue too, because what works for you fresh might not work for you at all when you're fatigued. And I made that mistake in Kona in 2019, you know, running in the top 10, feeling totally fine. But whenever I'd done the testing, I'd always felt like, even though the Nike Alphafly, or what it was, it the Nike Vaporfly, always was tested the most efficient, I always felt like my right hamstring was going to cramp in them. And sure enough, at, you know, 32K, boom, the right hamstring's cramping. And then I just, you know, limping home, losing, just dropping outside that top 10. And I honestly believe if I'd just gone a shoe that I knew, even if it was slightly slower and I'd been able to run those last few kilometers properly, you know, that makes a huge difference. So testing under fatigue is important. Trying to stay hydrated throughout a big test. But if you're swapping shoes, it doesn't matter. And try and do multiple tests before you fully make up your mind.
If you're swapping back and forward constantly, like I've done it in the past, done like 10 by 3K, and I reckon it takes about 2 or 3 reps before you start to go, okay, I think this is the better shoe. And progressively, as you get into the session, I did it with ASICS and Nike, and it didn't take long to work out that Nike worked for me as opposed to the ASICS. And then you kind of pick and stick. And if you're, I mean, you did that not only in Hawaii, Reedy, you did it several times, right? You're like, oh, it's kind of, and you put that shoe on and go, but it feels so much better. And So it's, you got to get the shoe and then just don't buy anything else. Just take that one to the race and forget about it.
Yeah.
If anyone's wondering what my protocol is, it's wait for Steve to text me to say he's ran 80K into his race shoes, and then I come around and take him.
Well, that's, mate. One of the guys that Reedy coached previously, who we still chat to a fair bit, he took 2 pairs of Alpha Flies to the track, and one had 70 Ks on them, and he said there was an absolute noticeable difference in the shoe. So basically,
that's really with that ZoomX foam in the Nike. So yeah. To anyone listening, that it does make a difference with that shoe, but other shoes you won't. You can. It's not going to matter. But I did the same thing. I tested one that had done 80K and one that was fresh, and you could feel the difference between the two shoes wearing them at the same time.
Well, that means you're a Hoka man through and through now, Danny. If you just get the hand-me-downs, you're a Hoka man through and
Speaking of hand-me-downs, bloody Apo, mate, from half of his pro career, I basically sponsored him with free Saucony shoes. I ask him, mate, can you talk to Saucony and get me a pair of shoes for this marathon? Yeah, we'll. No, nothing.
Really?
No.
That's it. Not
mate,
good.
The amount of free pairs he got off me.
Well, that was Steve owes you and I a pair, Reed. So maybe you can try those ones and see how they go for you.
Yeah.
We've got a guest joining us today. We had Paul Felder on a while ago, who's an ex-UFC fighter now turned triathlon frother. Today's guest is down the same line. He's done, he played 13 seasons of AFL in for multiple clubs, and now it's now he has got the triathlon bug well and truly. So David Zaharakis, thanks for joining us, mate.
No worries. Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Only one club. Played at one club.
Oh, really? I thought you went to, you're in WA for a bit.
No, that was, I was halfway through my career. I had a chance to go to West Coast. But I stayed, one of my best mates played over there, yep. Luke Shuey. But I had the chance to, and I stayed at Essendon in the end. And then West Coast won the flag the year after. So it didn't work out.
Pro careers are full of regrets, mate. And that's probably one of them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Still never won a final. So yeah,
safe to say, is that a safe assessment, mate? That you're a try frother now. You've got the bug well and truly.
Yeah, I got the bug. I mean, I've already got what, 4 races left this year that I'm doing. So yeah, got the bug. I started last year just as one off to do WA, to do Busso over there, and I reckon about 2 weeks into training, got the bug and already signed up for more, which I've now completed. So, mate, absolutely love it, and can't really see it any time soon.
When I met you in WA, Brad introduced from Hurt Locker. Brad introduced us, and he said David signed up for, and he named basically every single race on the Australian calendar for the year. And I'm just like, whoa, this dude is right into it. So, what have you done so far, and what's coming up?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, man. I just looked at the calendar and I thought, why not? Like you guys, that you competitor in you just kind of, and with footy, like obviously you play every single week, so you want to compete all the time when there's a comp on. So whenever I saw that there was a comp, I just kind of booked it. So I did Melbourne last year as the first half, and then into Busso full, and then I did Tassie, but crashed out there. My first real crash on the bike, which was quite an experience down there. And then did Geelong half, Port Mac full, and then went across to America and did Boulder over there, which is a cool little experience. So I've got Sunny Coast coming up, but I'm sure we'll talk about it. But I've been injured the last kind of couple months, probably since Port Mac. So trying to get on top of that and hopefully get up for Sunny Coast.
Did when you went over and did Boulder, Dave, what was your plan with the altitude? Did you give yourself time to adapt, or did you just get in there and hit it?
Yeah, so when I played at Essendon, every year in the off-season, I'd go to Boulder and train for 2 or 3 weeks. Yep. We used to go there as a footy club, and then I went back there. So the plan was to get there, for 2 weeks beforehand and adjust, because I remember when we went there, it would always be about 15-day period, and then we'd come back and really feel the effect of it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go over there for about that 15 days, but I couldn't train with my knee, really. I could only get on the bike or get in the pool. So it wasn't really the training base I wanted leading into it. And then I couldn't really do the events anyway, which I shouldn't have done. I shouldn't have done in the end.
Yeah. It's actually, it's a hard one. Only going 3 weeks is pretty good, but I used to find with any altitude camp, that first week's almost a write-off because you can't really train that hard.
Yeah.
So then you've got, if you're doing it for a race, then you got a week to train and then you got a week taper. So you're really getting a week in. So
I know. And that's the whole thing about that, like the taper and stuff. I kept finding that I was getting taper flus really bad. So for Port Mac leading into that, I didn't really taper that much going into that week. I thought I'd rather be like 5% fatigued going into Port Mac, but feeling 100% rather than being 70% or 60% because I'm snotty and all that kind of stuff. So that actually worked really well for me for Port Mac. And I might try and do a little bit similar for the next couple races this year, because I find I get it really bad. If I kind of try and taper off that 7 to 10 days beforehand, leading to race day, I am cooked.
I've never even heard of taper flu before.
Yeah, mate, I don't know why. My body just doesn't like it when I kind of taper off or shut down a little bit. It just completely shuts down. So as I said, I did it for Port Mac the other way, and it worked in the end because I got a great result compared to the first time.
So you kept it solid all the way up, like the weekend before you did like a really big sessions and then you slept like just a few days.
Yeah, I was talking to Mitch Kibbe about it, and he was saying that after Geelong, I was talking about it because Geelong I felt terrible. And he was saying he was training pretty hard up until probably the Thursday night. So I kind of adopted that mindset, train all the way through to the Thursday, and then the Friday, Saturday was just a couple of light sessions. The morning of the race in Port Mac, I felt amazing. I was still doing pretty heavy up until the weekend before, and even during the week did some solid sessions
Yeah, I've always found with bigger guys that they tend to need a. I'm assuming you're bigger. I can't tell through the thing, and I don't watch AFL, but it'd be hard to be good at AFL if you weren't big. So, but bigger guys tend to need a lot more training leading into a race, whereas you find smaller athletes, for whatever reason, smaller men seem to need a lot more time to freshen up. But something to do with muscle size, but I've heard that from quite a few different coaches. So that's probably the reason, I reckon. But yeah, to stick with what's working for sure.
Well, I'm trying on that. I'm trying to lose.
That was the next question.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing. Like, and I spoke to Brad about it. And it was kind of like, for 13 years, you train your specific body part, like upper body weights twice a week, whatever it is. I haven't done an upper body session for weights really for about 6 months, like a proper one. But obviously, every time I get in the pool and swim, my upper body just blows up, because that muscle memory is just so used to work and being this size. So it's funny, like everyone said to me leading up to Busto that I lost so much weight in my face and that I was looking gaunt and all that. But then when I weighed myself at Busto, which I don't weigh myself ever, but they did it before Busto, I was actually a kilo heavier than what I played at.
Yeah. So
it's just, yeah, the density of the muscle. I don't know what the science behind it, but I felt leaner and lighter, and all my running's a lot leaner and lighter when I played, but I was weighing heavier. So go figure.
Yeah.
Have your legs gotten bigger? Is that where the weight's gone?
Yeah, I definitely reckon my quads and glutes have definitely, that's where, yeah, the density I reckon's gone, because obviously you don't ride when you play footy. Every now and then you get on the bike for a cross train, but I reckon that's definitely where it is. Definitely skinnier here, so a bit bigger there, but my shoulders and upper body is all the same, even though I haven't done any weights.
Well, you have no testosterone left now, so your testes have probably shrunken into little prunes as well. So there's a bit of weight.
So it'll drop off naturally, mate. You'll be right. I've got a one of my professional females. She came from the AFLW, and she's gone through the same over a few years, like changing body shape, and just continues to change body shape. And I freely admit that I think it'll be 4 or 5 years of just constantly changing shape, as more so when she seems to have an off season and just does very little. Then when she comes back, it seems to just change shape more and more. So you've probably, the weight will come off steadily, mate. Don't worry.
I think if you really want to do it, a sustained altitude camp, where you just end up, especially in Boulder, where every 2 hour ride turns into 4 hours, and you just end up not being out. You're at a caloric deficit pretty much without meaning to be, and you just tick away a little bit higher metabolic rate at night. I had the same problem, because I did 6 years of weights for rugby union, and was, you know, when I started triathlon, I was close to 80 kilos. By the time I was racing at my peak, I was 61. So, but it always, those altitude camps, I'd come back and the muscle had just been stripped away. And I could never really strip it at sea level. I just, maybe because I love eating too much. But yeah.
Steve, about a couple of weeks ago, about just even like the aero position on the bike, like shoulders are trying to get down there and just adjust the body to all of that. And leaner, he said, he goes, might take you 2 years to get kind of more lean and into that position that you really feel comfortable in. And like, speak about altitude camp. So I've already penned in next year to do probably more fulls than halves. And I've spoken to the people that I know in Boulder that I'll probably spend a good 2 to 3 months over there. Probably actually 3 months, maybe the whole summer over there next year, and maybe come back for a couple of races like Port Mac and Cairns. So that's already the plan, to go spend a fair bit of time over there and do all that. Just to try and strip down just a little bit.
So you're still pretty young. Like, did you retire because of injury, or just was the time right? What was the reason behind? Because you're still at an age where, you know, you could have 6-7 years of improvement in triathlon.
Yeah, and that's the aim, to try and have, or I want to be right now. My mindset is I want to be in this space, in this game for the next 6-7 years. And it was kind of a combination of all different things. Like, I was 31 at the time. Essendon were kind of going through another rebuild, my sixth in my 13 years there. And a new coach come in, they want their new system. They see their 5-year plan. And if you're not in that, you're kind of on the outer. I started getting quite a few injuries later in my career. So first 10 years, zero surgeries. My last 3 years at the club had 5 surgeries, and they were pretty big ones, like 3 recos, body parts. So it was kind of that, where I couldn't train. I was missing 6 months of training. So you're not in front of the coach's eyes. They have a new plan, and then we weren't really going that well. And kind of got to the season halfway through 2021, where Ben Rutten, who was the coach at the time, just said, you're not in our future plans, our 3 to 5 year plan at the moment. You can go look somewhere else. Which we put the feelers out. There wasn't really much there because I was just about to have a wrist reconstruction at the time. And then, yeah, so that's when I just kind of in October of that year just called it quits, thought I felt old. So that's the difference too. Like in footy, I felt old at 31. And then as soon as I started triathlon last year at 33, man, I felt young again. Really like just the change in dynamics of the sport where obviously running's a lot smoother, whereas football's like sharp, hard change of direction, axel, decel, kind of mode, and that was really bad for my body, whereas now I find my body's feeling young again.
How many of your injuries from, like, is the current injury that you've got with running, is that a footy injury coming back to haunt you, or is it new?
By fault. Before Port Mac, I had a great 6-week block before Port Mac where I smashed all my training, everything, but the thing that I let get away from me was my weight. So I just forgot about strength training for a good 6-week period. And I remember the moment in Port Mac, it was about 30K in. And I realized that my hip was dropping and I just didn't have a strong enough glute. And it kind of went, oh shit, for the last 20Ks, my hip's been dropping massively. So I thought this is going to hurt me. And then about 3 days later, I tried to start running again. And the ITB friction in the knee was just, killing me. So that's the whole prep for Boulder, and did Boulder on an ITB friction, which I shouldn't have done. So that was just purely my fault for not doing my strength and keeping on top of that. It wasn't a foot injury. I had it 2 years ago on the other side of my leg and got rid of it within 3 weeks. Whereas this time around, I've let it now hang for about 2 months and just getting on top of it now. So it didn't have anything to do with footy, which was good, because footy, my worst one with footy is patellar tendonitis. I suffered with that for about 10 years in footy. And if any of you guys watched any games of footy, I used to have tape around my knees for my whole career. Got told can't run on athletics track, can't run on the road, can't run on bitumen, gravel, whatever. And then as soon as I started this, I'm running 5 days a week on roads and all that kind of thing with no tape. And as I said, my knees have never felt better. So from that point of view, it's really good that a footy injury hasn't carried over in that regard.
We asked this to Paul Felder. Would he do anything different with what he's learned through triathlon training? Would you change anything with how you prepared for AFL, or is it, nothing changed?
Yeah, it's interesting. People ask that one and they ask what's the real difference between it. I find if I had my time again in AFL, I'd definitely do a lot more of endurance training like this in the off-season. But, I mean, like I said, I went to Boulder anyway and trained, but it was a lot footy-specific training. I would have got on the bike a lot more and done a lot more endurance-based running that I know now with these sessions, because you can back them up a lot more. And in footy, in that 10 months you train in footy, you get a lot of, short, sharp change of direction type of training. But I reckon if you could mix it up with a bit of this longer endurance stuff, it can really help your base. That's what I've found. My base has just come down so much. And I'm running at a capacity now that used to exert so much energy to get to this level at like 345K pace or whatever it is in footy, you'd be blowing so much after one effort. So I would have brought in more of this type of training during my career when at the right times.
Yeah.
Unmixing both has definitely helped me out a lot.
It sounds like the strength training is pretty important to you, particularly after what you learned from Port Mac. So I guess a question for Reedy as well, how important do you think it is for everyone to be doing strength training, Reedy, in their programs, or is it very athlete specific, do you think?
Yeah, Clint and I talked about this recently, but there's the athletes that get injured, not always, but there's a pretty strong link between the athletes that skip it each week and then end up getting injured. So, there is the argument that it can take away performance from your key sessions. And, some coaches like Brett Sutton believe it should all be bike, swim and run specific. So he, does a lot of strength endurance work. But I also think, I don't want to speak, like he's obviously got some great results, but I think that can lead to injuries in itself. So, even for the athletes leading up to races, I still have them go through their sessions, even with really light load, because I just feel like the neuromuscular connections are just so important. And you can see when people are getting unbalanced, and you can stretch as much as you want, but if things aren't firing equally or at the same time, that imbalance is just going to keep popping up. And you're really not doing much with the stretching, because it's, you stretch for half an hour, go for 30 minutes runs back to where it was. So what do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think that 100%. Like the only time I've felt like I've got injured or whatever is when I've let that go. I feel really wrong. So I've had three injuries since I've started this sport. One was In January last year, when I first started training, was I did a calf like my second session. That was because I didn't do anything for 4 months before that and just thought I'm going for a run and did that. Then for about 6 months, I was really good. And then I got a new pair of shoes. Shouldn't have worn them because they were way too big, but I just wanted the new pair of shoes. And then did my calf again. And then for about 8 months, did nothing but strength work with my training and had a really good block and was feeling great. Had no niggles whatsoever. Great prep for Busso into Port Mac. And then obviously, like I said before, once I let it go in Port Mac, I kind of knew leading into it too. I was like every day waking up going, oh, I should do weights today, but now I've got to swim or a bike or whatever. So I knew at the moment that I was doing exactly what I was doing and it was going to cost me. So now in the last month, what I've been focusing on strength every second day because I'm not running or bike at the moment, my body's never felt stronger. So you do have to keep it up. I mean, it's like footy. We always did two weight sessions a week in footy, the same thing, because you need that strength base behind you. Well, that's what my body's used to. And yeah, you notice as soon as it drops off straight away that you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, you have those conversations a lot with athletes when they're when a niggle pops up. It's like, what do you think's caused it? Oh, I just haven't been doing as much of the strength stuff. And as soon as they get back to it, then it seems to help them get back on track. So you're not alone there, mate.
just as a bit of a quick one for listeners too. I really don't mind a hard strength session the day before a key bike session. It does tend to work fine. You feel your glutes firing great. I don't often schedule a big strength session the day before a key run session though. It really takes the pop out of your legs and doesn't seem to work the same way. So something to think about. I don't mind scheduling a strength session straight after the run. I think it's great to sort of try and get that soreness for the next day. And that's how we normally play it at RPG.
Exactly the same as what I was just about to say. So got you so used to in footy, we always had our main training session on a Wednesday or Thursday, depending when you play. And then that afternoon would be your main leg lift. So I substitute that now into my program that anytime I do a run day, and if I get fit two leg sessions in a week, it'll always be after the run. Yeah. Right, like the day before a bike's like fine. It's not as high impact on your body. It's the run straight into leg weights, which I find works best for athletes.
Yeah, that's great. We're sort of swiveling topics here. Oh, Clint, do you want to go before I start throwing in some just totally
I guess, well, stuff? You did say that you want to be in the sport long term. What are the goals? Hit us with something massive, mate.
Yeah, no, well, that's a cliche, but it's to be the best that I can be in this sport. Now, what that is if I can get to myself to a level where I'm one of the top age groupers and then you get your time down to a time that you can really launch in this sport and travel around the world and do it professionally or whatever. I don't want to throw that out there because that kind of, I think, takes away from...
You've just thrown it.
It's already thrown.
I think it takes away from the athletes who are actually pro. So I don't want to say that because they're at such an elite level. Like Steve ran past me in Port Mac and gave me a tap on the ass and he's running at 330K pace and I'm at 415 thinking I could never get to that stage. So the goal is I've now gone sub 10 in Port Mac, got a 9:47. The next goal is now sub 9:30 and then it's a sub 9. Like that's my goal, I'm going to keep moving the goalposts for as much as I can. But I know in this sport, it's all about time. I'm not just going to get there within the next 2 months, 3 months. It's potentially going to be 1, 2, 3, 4 years away. And for me, I'm just burying my head in all my training and trying to learn from you guys or from looking online, searching, following athletes, talking to pros at every event, what they're doing. The goal is to get as good as I can without any stone unturned and see what that actually leads to.
It's good, mate. I think, it's in this sport, if people are willing to put the time in and, you know, I remember when I finished school, everyone was like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I'm going to do triathlon. And I'd never done swim, bike or run. And they're like, what do you mean? And I said, I'm going to do it professionally. And then told some of my best mates, I said, I'll be making money in 2 years' time. I think it was like 12 years later I started making money. So it is time, but you got to be a little bit, you got to just not put limits on yourself in this sport because it's, especially with your background, it's nobody, it all counts towards it. So you're not starting triathlon at a year and a half ago or a year ago. You're starting triathlon from when you started training for AFL. So that's what I learned even with, you know, because I played hours of sport every day, that when I did go into triathlon, it was quite quick progress compared to other people because of I had a history of just training. Speaking, so, you go, Clint.
So just on that, like we asked similar question to Paul Felder, and he said he wants to be the best he can be, and he also said he wants to get to Hawaii, and on the weekend he qualified for Hawaii. So
congrats, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's listening.
No doubt.
So we chatted about it before, but I've actually just learnt more about it listening to the organizers speak. We're talking about the enhanced games before on here. For me, I actually didn't understand that a lot of their driving force behind it was to try and shine a light on how corrupt the Olympic system is, which I've always thought, you know, is a real problem where the athletes are getting shafted and everything else. What are your thoughts on the enhanced games? I mean, we basically said it would, you know, everything's got a price. Maybe we'd probably would jump in for a couple of mil. I don't know. But like, you know, it's fraught with problems, and obviously there's some issues there, but I'm just curious, you know, coming from elite sport yourself, what your thoughts are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
I won't mention Essendon.
We went through one of the biggest drug stories in all sports with us. Obviously I wasn't involved, but it's an interesting one because you come from a sport that potentially, well, our reputation is that it's clean, and then sport of like cycling, triathlon, and all that, people always question it, whether that's real. That's just the reality of the situation. People see Pogacar in the Tour de France and it's like, how is he that much better than everyone else? So it's always, there's always questions whether you like it or not around that. So then the enhanced games, like some people have the opinion of, yeah, why not? Let's just go to see how far the athletes can push themselves. And we already think about it in other sports, so why not just do it? And then the other purists are out there going, nah, like, let's just, well, we want our sports to be as clean as possible. So I haven't got a strong opinion on it. I love the fact that I still think the Tour de France and triathlon and Olympic Games and all that are pure, because you trust the governing bodies that are WADA and all that, that are taking tests are all legitimate. And you go, no, like the athletes are all fine. Cause that's what happened with us. People said that our players were taking drugs, but no one tested positive and they all were fine. So it'd be fun and cool to see how far, an athlete could push their body and do it if they wanted to do it. So if you're someone who wants to go do it. But I still think I love sports that you think that they're pure and you trust that they're pure. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
No, that's perfect. I mean, I think for me, my biggest problem is what it tells kids, you know, and the influence it has on them. And then also it's like, what are we just going to be watching women's events where they've dosed themselves up with testosterone and steroids, where it basically just looks like another men's event? Like, what's the limit here of what... Without any rules also, you know, there's... very much potential long-term health problems. And the biggest thing, I think people are saying, oh, it's going to be a flash in the pan and all that sort of stuff. They got some serious cash behind them. And I know probably each of us is going to be tuning in for the 100-meter sprint final. Like, it's going to be hard not to watch. I don't think it's going to be 1 year and done. I think there's going to be, it'll probably be a regular thing. I think they can go for 4 years without making a single dollar. So if everyone's watching it, eventually sponsors will come on board.
You guys have spent time in the States, and like every ad that comes on TV, like at the end of it, will say "bought to you by Pfizer" or "bought to you by whatever." Like Big Pharma runs the show. So if athletes go, they can win $1 million for breaking a world record and win $1 million. I think $1 million for winning an event. Plus, if they then go on there and they say, you know, oh, Tim Reed won the triathlon. All his pharmaceuticals have been done by Pfizer. Imagine the sponsorship that they're going to get coming from, like, the average athlete at the Olympics gets, I think it was 30 grand. Yeah, $30,000 to that's their annual wage. So like if you're whatever we want to choose, triathlon, and you go from earning 30 grand competing to then potentially breaking a world record, winning a gold medal and being bulk sponsored by a medical company, it would have to be pretty bloody tempting.
Reedy, if they came to you and said, we'll give you $5 million, but you got to be juiced to the gills, what do you reckon?
Yeah, initially, my biggest problem is just what it tells my kids. That's the thing I really struggle with. But 5 million.
10 mil.
What about if they said?
I like that it's clear and there's no secrets, and you know, like, you know, that's in some ways. But it's just, yeah, I just don't think I could do it. Like
$5 million to compete, and we guarantee that your hair will grow back with all
the I'm doing it.
Early adopters in this that make a lot of money out of it. But then, like you're saying, you don't know the long-term health effects. You won't know it for like 10 or 20, 30 years, will you? Like,
yeah.
If the sport's still going at that stage, then, yeah, you won't probably know really what they're taking now is then long-term of their body when they're 50, 60, 70 years old. So it could last for quite a while. And then later down the track, like we find out now about things in the 70s and 80s that don't work now, that you find out later that, no, we actually probably shouldn't be doing this anymore, or that drugs have improved so much that they end up helping you and not hindering you. So you just, there's such an untapped area. But I agree with you that it just shows what a kid who's 10 years old, who's at school, who may be the fourth fastest kid at school, and they're going, oh, well, what if when I'm 16, 17, I can get a bit of juice in me, I'll become the fastest kid and I can do the enhanced games rather than the clean ones, get more money and whatever it is. So there's so many rabbit holes you can go down with the sport.
Yeah.
Back to the aerobic training, like you wish you were doing a bit more of that in the in your footy days. Are you the guy around AFL now when you're chatting to the current AFL players and, hey, mate, you should get on a bike. Come for a ride with me. It's good fun.
Mate, we're precious units when we're playing AFL, I can tell you that. We don't like doing anything outside of the program, or especially if you get found out that you're doing things outside the program, you get smashed. So it's more finding the right times, because the boys do ask, like, what do you think the main difference are? Just like what you've asked, or how do you feel now compared to where you play footy? So I was always someone that definitely in that 8 week period off season. So I had a bike during my career, but rode it sporadically. I was always a swimmer during my career, not a great one, but I just, whenever I was injured, I would go do a lot of cross training and swimming. It's how you adapt it to your football lifestyle that's not going to impact your performance on the footy field, which I reckon is just in the off season though, because you recovering from games is too hard these days. The game demands so much that during the week, you probably can only do a swim. You can't do an extra bike or run. So it's in the off season where you could really try and fit that in.
What do they think of your nerd belt?
Mate, love it. Mate, I've got plenty of support on the nerd belts. You would have seen during that video that absolutely went viral. So many people love it. That was quite a quirky video there that ruffled a few feathers online, I can tell you that. But many people liked it.
Mate, I just looked at it now, 2.5 mil. That's huge.
Wow.
I was going to ask you how many hours a week you're training, but I've seen some of these social media posts, mate. I think you'd be putting as much effort into some of these social media posts. Hours a week training and hours a week of social media influencing. Hit me with it.
It's hard putting out content, because you might think of an idea or three ideas in that 1 week, but then nothing comes to you for a month, and people demand it. So that post basically, I reckon alone, got me like 10,000 new followers. My base had been since footy, like basically exactly the same, and now it's a new audience in triathlon. But those one or two videos that have gone viral have got me like 10,000 new people, but from all around the world. So people that don't have a clue who I am, they just go, oh, there's a guy who's created some triathlon content. He does triathlon. Let's follow him. So then you kind of feel like you're obligated to try and make more content for him. But then there's the pressure of, you got to create good content to keep him.
Yeah. Is it paying off with, are you getting sponsorship out of it? Like, what's the status for your expenses in triathlon, or is it pretty much all sorted?
Yeah. So I've been lucky that the first couple of sponsors that came on board or with me were with me for my footy career. So it's still the profile hanging over coming into triathlon. And then I guess it's still, which I'm fine with, it's still the profile of footy that now gets me sponsorships in Ironman or triathlon, which, again, I'm more than fine with, because then the more I do the sport and the more I do content or the more I do races or whatever, the more you potentially will get sponsors in Ironman or just start transferring over to full-time Ironman or triathlon sponsors. So that's been helping me a lot. So I've been very lucky. My next race suit that I'm getting made at the moment is going to be just basically sponsored all down the front. So I'm definitely going to look like a little advertising board, which is fine. So, yeah, it's been good. But like you said before, you don't really make money in the sport. First off, it's just, they're covering my race fees, travel, car hire, all that stuff with your bike, all that kind of thing. So looking to keep growing it, mate, you always need sponsors. I said, like, you know, in the sport that it's such an expensive sport. You don't really, someone said to me 12 months ago, you don't get into triathlon to become rich. It's a lifestyle. Yeah. Mate, I love that lifestyle. And as I said, if I'm getting people that covering some expenses and helping support you and you can help them in any way that, it's going well so far, but always.
Yeah. Good. I don't, you say you've been lucky, but I don't think you have. I think you've put the work in, it pays off. And when you do get close to those pro ranks, it's going to be a very easy way to, you know, make a living because you put the work in. So
it was, yeah, one of those things when I first started hanging out with you a bit, Reedy, that I never really understood how you found the content creation pretty like anxiety inducing, right?
Like, oh, you'd get to like a week or two. Cause I had to do X number of posts for each sponsor per month. And I'd be like, far out, I haven't done this one for this thing. Or, you know, I honestly, when I sort of pulled back from racing, I don't use the word retire too often. But it was such a relief just to be like, oh, I don't have to do social media anymore. I still do it, obviously, for RPG. But we just sit down, we schedule a bunch of posts for a month ahead. I don't think about it because it's hardly ever me in the photos. So it's easy to do. But there's always that, you know, you're hit and misses on social media. Sometimes you put up a shitty little joke and it goes huge. And then sometimes you think, this is genius, and no one likes it at all. And you're like, you sit there going, oh, I can't pull it down, but it's there for life. So
there's something that, like the last month, haven't been able to train. I'm in Melbourne winter. I've moved house and I'm about to move house again. So twice my content the last month has been shit house. Like, then you start getting stressed and anxiety about shit, like people are wanting this thing and they might not be, but you start thinking that, and I've got to put some content out, or, but it's not fun content. You're Melbourne winter. Like, what's there to do? So it's like that every day, living that life, because you create that expectation of people that follow you. But when it's organic, when you're racing, when you're traveling, when you're training every day, it's easy. Routine that it becomes really hard. And then, yeah, you get a sponsor text, you're going, hey, can you put up that post this week, or can you create this? And
the worst one is the smaller paying sponsors give you this real cringy post that you got to put up, and you're like, man, this sucks. And then you put it up and you know that you lose 1,000 followers instantly, and you're like, oh, why did I do that?
100%. Yeah, organic sponsors. So it's great that if, like, triathlon right now, I'm getting triathlon sponsors. Easy. Like, Nerd Belt, you put up a thing that's like just a funny, quirky one about, like I did with pulling everything out of the Nerd Belt. It's like, that's fun. That's cool. It's organic to people that marathon runners all around the world and all these other ones. So, but then also with my old lifestyle, football, you still get some like influencer ones that are just completely irrelevant to what you're kind of doing now. And they're the ones that the algorithm kind of shuts down and people go, oh, why are you putting them up? But you've also got to make a living and make some money. That's your earner. Like, that's how you get an income. So you kind of got to filter them in and out as well with like the pure organic fun stuff.
I love seeing those ones, mate, with people like yourself. It's it comes up on the feed and it's like you standing out there mowing your lawn or something. It's like, hey, about time I mowed my lawn with my nice John Deere mower. And you're just like, we know what's going on here. No one's going to go and buy a John Deere mower because you don't really like it. One of the questions I've got, the tan, that's like kind of one of the yardsticks with AFL players. Did you do it routinely when you were playing AFL, and have you, one, had a crack at it since you've been running more, and two, are you tempted to go and have a crack at it since you've been running a lot more?
What is the tan?
It's a 3.8K loop where, like, you basically go and measure yourself against all the other AFL and athletes in Melbourne. We'll go do it one day, Reed.
Yeah, so like at the tan, they call the horseshoe, like kind of the basic starting point. It's got all the elite times on record from any event that's been there. So I think it's got like the top 10 times on there. I think Steve Monaghetti, mate, I can't remember. He might be on there, but it's got all the elite times on there. So we actually, every Saturday for about 3 years, would do hill sprints at the tan in the off season, but we never did it as a 3.8 loop. We used to do Princess Park, a 2K at Princess Park there. So I've never done the tan as a one-off run. Anderson Street Hill scares the shit out of me doing that, getting up there. So I am tempted to do it, but that's like the question when people ask me if I want to do a marathon straight out. I'd rather keep doing triathlons and not do just a marathon and get a sub three in a triathlon rather than just do a straight out marathon. So that's kind of my thought behind that. I don't just want to do a straight run challenge. I'd rather do it in a triathlon now that I'm just so invested in this sport. But yeah, it'd be nice to they used to do it, I know, at Essendon. Our old doctor, who's not with us anymore, he used to claim that he had the title at 65 racing against like 30-year-olds, all the boys and stuff. So he was an elite runner. So yeah, it used to be massive in the AFL, but no one does that anymore because they just do like 1Ks and 2Ks now.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm disappointed. I was hoping you'd go on there and run significantly quicker now that you're running a lot compared to the AFL days.
I'll claim it anyway. We'll say that.
I thought you were talking about before each event, every game, you used to get a fake tan. I was like, oh, pretty sure you could get one naturally, although if you're in Melbourne, no chance.
So hit us with the next Ironman. David, what do you got coming up?
Yeah, so prepping for Sunny Coast, and I signed up for West Sydney too. I want to do them as a back-to-back, just a fun, competitive challenge because they're not going to be at my peak or anything like that because I'm just getting back into racing post-injury. So I want to do those two races, just not cruise through, but kind of that just that tempo. And then Melbourne in November, then really give that a crack, try and qualify for Marbella next year. So prepping really for Melbourne at the moment.
Who's coaching you, Dave?
Now, so I had Brad just do my program for Busso, and then now I just do my own stuff myself now.
You'd never have picked it using races as your rehab.
Yeah. I just love to compete. Like, there's a I'm doing. Let's just go for it. I do it all myself now. Honestly is a question that people ask me so often. Like, why haven't you got a coach, or who's your coach, whatever kind of thing. I don't know. Playing AFL for 13 years and getting a coach telling you what to do, where to be, all this kind of stuff every day. I kind of just wanted a break for the first, say, like 2 years of triathlon. And I answer in the way that if I get to a certain point in triathlon, so if I get to like near close to 9 hours and then I'm really like splitting hairs about how to get that improvement, I reckon it'll be a time then that I source a coach and really trying to get that next level of, all right, this is how close you are to the elite, get there. But right now, organic improvement is so much at the moment that I want to just do that, and then I'll potentially look for a coach down the track.
What I'd probably do, like, not to interfere, but like write out your plan and just get a third party to look at it, yep. A second party, and just like really, yeah, just say, hey, Because you are getting a few injuries, I just think it'd be good to be like, oh, this might be a bit silly, or maybe you need a bit more of this. And because it's only because I did a lot of that when I was starting out, and I reckon I could have fast-tracked. And I had a big background in exercise physiology, but I used to think I was invincible too. And then, you know, would have injuries and stress fractures and all sorts of things. And I sort of regret not getting good advice early on, even if it was me self-coaching and just getting someone to advise me. And when I did get a coach, my results, the consistency just went through the roof. So
I know you see the same physio as me, and he always says, like, you need to get a coach. He's me for it. So yeah, it's something I definitely will look to get into it, because like you said, you don't want to start getting injured and then missing out on 3-4 months of the sport, and then you're not really competing at your peak level whenever you need to.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you've got pro aspirations and, you know, you're in your 30s, you don't really have a year to waste. So I'm just want to see you get there. thanks for coming on, Dave. Like, a pleasure to speak to you. I think it's good that I've never watched AFL because I didn't get nervous or starstruck. No offense. I look forward to meeting you at a race, and I'll be at both Sunny Coast and Western Sydney, so hopefully catch up there.
Yep, let's do it.
Thanks for joining, mate.
Thanks, mate.